Okay. So the Haftorah, which is chosen for Chukat, is about Yiftach Hagil Adi. So I think that a lot of people know at least one thing about Yiftach. The one thing that we know about him, which we'll get to if you don't know it, I don't want to ruin the story for you. But the one thing that we know about him is not written in this, even though this is really the only chapter that talks about him. The Haftorah conveniently cuts off the very end of the story, but let's see first what happened. Sorry. So the background is the previous chapter that tells us that Am Yisrael had not been behaving all that properly, that instead of following God, what they've done instead is they followed the various idolatries of the various Canaanite nations. Vayavdu et ha-ba'alim ve'et ha-ashtarot ve'et Elohei Aram ve'et Elohei Tzidon ve'et Elohei Moav ve'et Elohei Bnei Amon ve'et Elohei Plishtim ve'yazvu et Hashem ve'lo avaduhu. So they worshipped every single idolatry that they can find, but God they didn't worship. That was in chapter 10, Perek Yud, Pasuk Vav. So as a result, what happens is that the Jews are attacked. And God allows these various nations to attack them, basically saying that if the Jews are not going to be morally superior, then they have really no right to, certainly, to live in peace. So then Perek Yud Aleph begins. Again, the Jews are being attacked by these various nations. Vayiftach ha-giladi haya gibur chayil, v'hu ben isha zona, v'yolad gilad et yiftach. So there was a mighty man named Gilad, and he was v'hu ben isha zona. Vayolad Gilad et Yiftach, Vatelad Eshit Gilad, Lo Banim, Vigilu Bnei Isha, Vigershut Yiftach, Lo Lo Tinchal Bevet Avinu, Ki Ben Isha Acheret Ata. So here we have Yiftach is rejected by his brothers because he's told that he is from a different mother and therefore not acceptable. That means we find someone with a less than acceptable lineage. He's somewhat tainted. And the result is, Vayivrach Yiftach Mipnei Echav. He runs away from his brothers. Vayeshev Be'eretz Tov. V'laktu El Yiftach Anashim Reikim V'yitzu Imo. So Anashim Reikim does not sound all that good. People of without substance. Empty people. People without substance. But what he does form is a confederacy of these people. V'yihi b'yamim v'yilchamu b'nei Amon im Yisrael. And what happens at that point is that the children of Amon go and attack Israel. V'yihi k'asher nilchamu b'nei Amon im Yisrael v'yichuzik nei Gilad l'kachet et Yiftach me'eretz tov. And when this happens, they go and they send the elders of Gilad go, and they want to summon Yiftach back. Vayomer Yiftach, Lecha v'hiyita lanu l'katzin v'nilchama b'vnei Amon. So this Yiftach, who had been rejected, he's now being told, come, we'll make you an officer, we'll make you a leader, and you'll help us to fight against Amon. Vayomer Yiftach l'ziknei Gilad, Hello, atem sanetem oti, v'atem gishun mi beit avi, madu abatem elai atak asher tsar lachem. You hated me, you rejected me. Why do you come now for me when it's now things are difficult? V'yem rizikne gilad el yiftach lachein ata shavnu elecha v'halachte imanu v'nilchamte b'vnei amon v'itan l'rosh l'chol yoshvei gilad. So they try to make amends. They don't actually answer the question.
They say nothing because
you are,
that's why we're.
We need whatever. Now we need you. The Yiftach HaGiladi. Yiftach is the one who's the.
Eshet Gilad. Sorry, not Eshet.
Right.
Sorry.
Okay. Okay. Now, so far, there would be a very minimal connection between what we've read so far and the parasha. What happens next is really the reason it's connected. Vayishlach Yiftach Malachim el Melech b'nei Amon. So instead of right away going to war, what he does is he says sends emissaries. Lemor, and he says, Ma li v'lach. Kivata elai lihilachem ba'artzi. Why, meaning, what's the problem over here? Why are you coming to fight in my land? Vayomer bin melech b'nei Amon el malchei Yiftach. Ki lakach Yisrael et artzi ba'alatomi Mitzrayim me'arnon va'ad hayabok va'ad hayarden v'tahishiva eten b'shalom. So what's the response? Is that when the Jews left Egypt, which goes back to things that we're told about in this week's parasha, that when the Jews left Egypt, what they did is they took away the land from our ancestors. But Yosef owed. By the way, if you're counting, around 300 years have gone by. But Yosef od Yiftach v'yishlach malachim el melech b'nei Amon. So he does not accept that as an answer, and he sends more emissaries. But Yomer lo korma Yiftach lo lakach Yisrael et eretz Moab et eretz b'nei Amon. We did not take your land. Ki ba'alotami Mitzrayim v'yelech Yisrael b'midbar ad yamsuf v'yavo kadesha. And now he goes back and he tells over the story from this week's parasha. Vayishlach Yisrael melachim melech Edom lemor ibrana ba'artzecha v'lo shema melech Edom v'gam melech Moav shalach v'lo avo v'yeshev Yisrael b'kadesh. So if you just hold that for a second, it's pretty much going to source number 2, which is in Parakaf in Sefer Bamidbar. Vayishlach Moshe melachim Mikadesh melech Edom, ko amar achichi Yisrael, ata yadata, et kol tla shem matzatanu, vayirdu avotenu mitzrayim, v'neshev mitzrayim yamim rabim, vayiru lanu mitzrayim levotenu, v'tzakel Hashem. Now, first of all, it's interesting because what Moshe does over here is he sends a message to Edom. So let's go back to the parsha for a second, and then we'll go back to what Yiftach does. But you already recognize that Yiftach's mode of approaching this is not all that different from the mode which Moshe takes. But so far, and let's focus on this, Moshe is turning to Edom. Who is Edom? Source number 2. Who is Edom? Edom, of course, are the children of Esav. So what does Moshe say to the children of Esav? He's essentially telling them, remember all the way back there were two brothers, Yaakov and Esav? Remember there was a bracha that was supposed to go? And remember that you're really upset that Am Yisrael took the bracha? So what was the result of the bracha that they took? The result is that Am Yisrael then ended up inheriting the Brit Bein HaBetarim. What are the ramifications of getting the Brit Bein HaBetarim? Is that the Jews would be enslaved for hundreds of years. That was what the Brit was. So that if, therefore the bracha that Yaakov took, this is what happened, which means when Esav sells the Bechorah, why does it say that he detested the Bechorah? What did he detest? He detested the responsibility of having to live up to the Brit Bein HaBetarim. So Moshe starts the negotiations by saying, listen, we went down to Egypt, we called out to God, God answered us, God took us out. And then Moshe says, we've gotten to your borders. That's the end of Pasuk Tet Zayin, Pasuk Yud Zayin. Nabrana ba'artzecha, lo na'avor b'sadeh uv'kerem, v'lo nishtem me'be'er, derech ha'melech nelech, lo nite yamin u'smol, ad asher na'avor gvulecha. Basically, Moshe is saying, is just give us an ability to pass through. V'yom e'lov Edom, lo ta'avor bi pen b'cherev etzei l'kratecha. So the response of Edom, he's not impressed, or nor does he seem to care about the whole story. What does he say? You cannot pass through, and if you try to, I will come out to greet you with war. But Yemori Lov Bnei Yisrael b'misila na'ale. No, we're just going to go straight through. But nonetheless, he does not. They do not let him go in. V'yima'ein Edom naton et Yisrael avor b'gvulo v'yet Yisrael me'alav. So the first attempt of Moshe to try to proceed through the land of Edom doesn't work. Next. Look at source 4. Vayishlach Yisrael malachim el Sichon melech Emori lemor, Ebra ba'artzecha, lo nita b'sadeo v'kerim, lo nishtem mei be'er, b'derech melech neleich, ad ashen avar gvulecha. So again, let us go through, we're not going to touch anything, we're going to go through. V'lo natan Sichon et Yisrael avor b'gvulo, v'yasof Sichon et kol amo, v'yitzei l'krat Yisrael amidbara, v'yavo yatsa v'yilachem b'Yisrael. So over here we don't have a threat. Over here, what does Sichon do? Sichon actually goes to war. V'yakeyu Yisrael l'fi charev, and Israel then smites or smote them by a sword. V'yirash et artso me'arnon ad yabok ad b'nei Amon ki az gvul b'nei Amon. V'yikach Yisrael et kol ha'arim ha'ele, v'yeshiv Yisrael b'kol areya emori b'chashvon v'chol b'notea. So Israel is successful in this battle, and they capture all of these cities that had belonged to Sichon. But then we get to an interesting military point that we had perhaps not paid attention to. Pasuk Kavav. Ki cheshbon ir Sichon, melech Emori, he, v'hu nilcham b'merech Moav harishon, v'yikach kol artso miyado ad Arnon. And we'll skip, you know, a little bit over here, but basically, what are we told over here? When Am Yisrael come out, they do not attack Edom, Moav, or Ammon. Why not? Okay. Right. So all of these nations are family. When it comes to Edom, we're told that God gave Har Seir le'Esav, that God gave Esav his inheritance. And over here, Am Yisrael does not go and attack or try to take it away. When it comes of Lot, Ammon and Moab are children of Lot. No, again, over here, we don't try to take it away, but who do we take land from? From Sichon, Ha'emori. Right? Who had taken land from them? So once they had taken land from Moab and from Ammon, so now what happened? That means that we're not taking it from Moab or Ammon, we're taking it from Sichon. Why do we take it from Sichon? Because they attacked us. So they attacked us, so therefore we emptied out Sichon, we took the land. Look at source number 5, just to get this perspective very clear. Which is a verse over here that I just skipped. Hine inyanak tuvim hanal, amur chazal, Ammon u'moav taharu b'sichon, shelo haya l'Yisrael reshut l'lochem, imam likach eretz Ammon Moav, ela al yedei sichon, shelakach mitchila b'milchama me'amon Moav. Ki mufurash b'sefer shvavtim b'divrei yiftach ha'giladi. What did all that mean? That Am Yisrael were never going to take Moav and Ammon. But why do they take it? They took it because Moab and Ammon had a fight with Sichon, Emori, and the Emori took that land, so Am Yisrael took it from them. So now, what's happening? If we get back to our chapter, what has happened? So the Bnei Ammon are coming to Am Yisrael with a complaint, you stole our land. When did you steal our land? Hundreds of years ago. So what's Yiftach's response? We didn't take your land. We didn't take anything from you. Yes?
When
No, it's till aborted. Yeah. It's not normally ad bichlal. It depends on the case. I don't know. Should we have gone to war to fight?
No, we should have gone to protect ourselves.
Right, but then once we capture the land, did we then have a moral responsibility of giving that land back?
Because we were told that.
Right, but we did take it. Okay, I understand. I understand. So now we see what the claim of Bnei Amon is, if we go back to the first source. Pasuk Yud Zayin, Vishlach Yisro Melachim HaMelech Edom, Lemor, Ebrona Ba'artzecha V'lo Shema Melech Edom, V'gam Melech Moav, Shalach V'lo Vav, V'yeshev Yisro B'Kadesh, V'yelech Ba'midbar, V'yisav Et Eretz Edom, V'et Eretz Moav, V'yavo Mizrach Shemesh L'Eretz Moav, V'yachanun Be'ever Anon, V'lo Bo V'gvul Moav, K'irnon G'vul Moav. So he's going back and saying, no, we passed by Edom, we passed by Moav, we did not go into those lands, they didn't let us go in, we didn't go in. Vayishlach Yisrael melachim el Sichon melech Amori, melech Heshbon, vayomer lo Yisrael nabar nabartzecha ad mekomi, let us pass through to go to our land, velo imin Sichon Yisrael avor begvul, vayasof Sichon et kol amo v'yachanu b'yatzava v'yachemim Yisrael. Right? So Sichon didn't believe Israel that they would pass through peacefully, and they went to war. Vayitein Hashem elokei Yisrael et Sichon v'et kol amo b'yad Yisrael v'yakum v'yirash Yisrael kol eretz Amori yoshev eretz ahi. And we took over that entire land. So basically what he's saying is, we fought Emory. They attacked us, we took their land. We needed to get through. No one was letting us through. They attacked us, and we took the land. Va'ata, Hashem Elokei Yisrael, harish et Emory, bnei amo Yisrael, va'ata, tarishenu. Hello, et asher yirishcha kamush elokecha oto tirash ve'et kol asher yirish Hashem elokecha mipneinu oto nirash. V'ata hatov tov ata mi balak ben tzipor melech Moav harov ravim Yisrael im nucham nucham bam. Which is also interesting, because he goes back and says, and are you any better than Balak, the melech of Moav, who came and attacked us at that point? V'shev Yisrael b'cheshvon v'nateh v'or v'nateh, and so on and so forth. Va'anochi pasuk of Zion, lo chatati lach, va'ata ose iti ra'ali lachem bi, yishpot Hashem hashofet hayom b'ni u'bein b'nei Yisrael, u'bein b'nei Amon. V'lo shema melech b'nei Amon el divrei yiftach asher shalach elav. So, my question till this point is, what is our opinion of Yiftach? Which means, does Yiftach seem to you to be somebody who is irresponsible, or somebody who is some kind of a failed leader, or somebody who seems to be acting in a very responsible way?
He's using restraint, and he's trying to be reasonable and make explanation without.
Right, and he has historical consciousness.
Yes.
He's a very right.
This is what happened.
Right, which means, over here, basically, Yiftach opened up Sefer Bamidbar, and he reads it, and it's not even that he's reading into a reading between the lines. He has the Chumash opened in front of him, and that's what he's using in his negotiations. And what's the response? Melech ben Amon doesn't accept it. He's also very interesting when he says, Yishpot Hashem HaShofet Hayom Bein B'nei Yisrael Bein B'nei Amon. Let God be the judge of what's going on. And so it also seems to be, if anything, he seems to be quite impressive. So if that's not enough, we continue a little bit more. Pasuk Kaftet, Vatihi al Yiftach Ruach Hashem, Vayavor et Gilad ve'et Menasheh, Vayavor et Mitzpeh le'Gilad, u'mimitzpeh Gilad avar b'nei Amon. Without getting into all the geography of where he goes and so on, Vatihi al Yiftach Ruach Hashem, the Spirit of God was upon him. So again, that sounds to be a positive thing. Then Pasuk Lamed, V'yidar Yiftach Neder LaHashem, and then Yiftach makes a vow to God. V'yomar Im Naton Titein Et Bnei Amon Biyadi, if you give Bnei Amon in my hands, Now, before I continue, what exactly will be the other side of the thing? Till this point, do we have any problems with Yiftach? Not only don't we, apparently the text doesn't have any problems with him either. But regarding what he then says is really where the question arises. V'hayo hayotze asher yetze midalte beiti likrati b'shuvi b'shalom mibnei amon v'yela Hashem v'alitiu ola. He says, that which comes to greet me, that goes out of the door of my house and greets me in peace, when I return in peace from having defeated Bnei Amon, will be to God, and I will give it up as an offering. So what exactly that means, let's not... As a burnt offering. As a complete offering. Right. Where? By the Akedah, which is a very, very similar terminology. V'lei Hashem la'ola does not say... V'leitiu ola means something will go up, will be made holy. V'yavor yiftach al b'nei amon l'chem b'nei Hashem b'yado. God allows him to be victorious. V'yakem me'ar'er va'ad bo'acha miniach esrim ir va'ad avil kramim makag dola ma'od v'yikne'u b'nei amon b'nei Yisrael. So what happens? He's victorious. Now, if I'm not mistaken, if you take a look in your Haftorahs, you'll find that this is where the Haftorah ends. Yes. Haftorah ends in Pasuk Lamed Gimel. So basically, it tells this whole story of Yiftach. Yiftach, if anything, the way that the Haftorah is cut, it focuses on the whole fight with the various nations, letting us go through, not letting us go through. And it tells us how that which took place, or that which transpired all those years before, now is coming back again into the discussions regarding whose land this actually is. So that's where it ends. Now, despite everything, and again, the reasons that we should like Yiftach are... Again, you said his restraint, his historical consciousness, the Spirit of God is with him. Now, and what about this point, Vayidor Neder, he makes a vow. Do you like that or do you not like that? Why would he make a vow? But why would he make a vow? Okay, now the fact that he makes a vow, is it good or bad? We don't like vows. There are only two occasions in the Chumash when it says Vayidor Neder. I'll look at the two of them, or we'll look at the two of them, and then you'll try to determine two questions. One, is this good or bad? And two, why he does this? And it'll be very, very obvious. Look at source 8, and then we'll look at 9. 8 is when Yaakov leaves Eretz Yisrael. V'yidor Yaakov neder le'mor imyeh Elokim imadi u'shmarani b'derech hazeh asher anochi alech v'natan li lechem l'chol beged l'vosh, and so on. That Yaakov makes a neder when he leaves. And whether Yaakov's neder is good or bad is something that we can debate as well. I mean, at face value, it sounds like a very good thing. Of course, you can find various opinions and various sources that will tell us all kinds of terrible things happened because of the vow that Yaakov made, including you can even find those who claim that that's why Rachel died. But at this point, it doesn't sound like a terrible thing, and we don't see...
It doesn't say what his
nether
is.
He said, right. I didn't go to the whole nether. Source number 9 is the only other place in Chumash where it says V'yidor Neder. And what's the where is that? In this week's parsha, as the Jews are preparing for war, v'yishma k'nani melech arad yoshea negev ki v'yisrael derech atarim v'yilchem b'yisrael v'yishb mimenu shevi. They capture Jews. V'yidor yisrael neder l'Hashem v'yomar im naton titein et ha'am hazeh b'yodi v'hacharamti et areihem. V'yishma Hashem b'kol yisrael v'yitein et ha'k'nani v'yicharem et hem v'et areihem v'yikra Hashem ha'makom charma. So, I would have every reason to believe that Yiftach HaGiladi, who has displayed a great deal of historical consciousness, who has displayed a knowledge of Sefer Bamidbar, knows that when Am Yisrael went off to war, they made a neder. So it sounds that he is acting in that exact same way, and therefore what was good over there is good as well. Now, we can then continue and say, okay, but what about this neder that he makes, and is this a good neder or a bad neder? Now, the part of the story which you'll see is not as simple as you necessarily think, but the part of the story that tells us about his keeping his vow is the part which is cut out and not read over in the Haftorah. Why is it not in the Haftorah? Because it doesn't relate to the Parsha at all. Not only that, we ended on a good note. What's the good note? Am Yisrael were victorious. So what happens then? Pasuk Lamed Dalet back in the first source. V'yavo Yiftach HaMitzpah El Beito. V'nei Bito Yotzeit Lekrato B'tufim U'b'mocholot V'raki Yichida Ein Lo Mimenu Ben Obat. So Yiftach has an only daughter, back on the first page, last two lines, first page. His daughter comes to greet him, I gave you the English over here already, with timbrels and with dances. Pasuk Lamed Hey, V'yihi kikroto, Kichroato ota, when he sees her, v'yikrat begadav, he tears his clothing, v'yomer, ahabiti hachreya hichriatini, v'at hayit ba'ochrei, v'nochi patsti pi el Hashem, v'lo uchal lashuv. The translation from the JPS is, and it came to pass when he saw her, that he rent his clothes and said, alas, my daughter, thou hast brought me very low, and thou art become my troubler. I've opened my mouth unto the Lord, and I cannot go back. Pasuk Lamed Bav, Vatomer Elav Avi, Patsita et Picha El Hashem, Asei Li Ka'asher Yatzami Picha, Acherei Asher Asa Lecha Hashem Nekamot Me'ayvecha Bibnei Amon. And she then says, my father, if you open your mouth to God, do unto me that which came out of your mouth, for God has allowed you to take vengeance against the enemies, the children of Ammon. But Tomer Elaviha, Yaseli Adavar Hazeh, Harpei Mimeni Shnayim Chodashim, she says, just give me this thing, give me 2 months. Ba'elcha V'yaradati El Harim, I'm going to go down to the mountains. Ve'evka al bitulai anochi reyotai. I'm going to go and cry for my virginity, I and my companions. Ve'yomer lechi, go, ve'yishlachota shnei chadashim ve'telechi v'ra'otea ve'tefk al bitulai el harim. And she goes and she cries with her companions for 2 months. Ve'himiketz shnayim chadashim, the end of the 2 months, ve'toshav el aviha. She returns to her father, Vaya'as la et nidro. He does to her his vow, Asher Nadar, which he vowed. Vihi lo yada ish, and she had not known a man, Vihi chok b'Yisrael, and that was the custom in Israel. Miyamim yamima telachna benot Yisrael, letanot labat yiftach hagiladi, arbat yamim b'shana. The daughters, and it's not really clear where the last, where the previous verse should end, V'tichok b'Yisrael, why the new verse, I mean, it sounds like it could read V'tichok b'Yisrael, Mimim Yamima, or V'tichok b'Yisrael is the fact that she wasn't married and she did not know a man. But either way, it says that it was the custom of Israel that people went yearly 4 times a year to lament the daughter of Yiftach. No, the whole thing is very strange. But let's read the Hebrew. Forget the English a second. Read the Hebrew again. Miyamim yamima telachna benot Yisrael Matanot Levat Yiftach Yiladi Arbat Yamim B'Shana. Okay. So, after reading this, over here, the translate here is to lament. So, tell me, what was the vow that Yiftach made, and what is it that he did? What were the exact words? What were the exact words that he says? Valitihu Ola. Valitihu Ola. Now that's an excellent question. If he really only had one child, so what was he expecting was going to happen? So I'll try to answer that. Get rid of his wife.
It doesn't say that he
sacrificed. Yeah, isn't that interesting? It doesn't say that.
It doesn't say that.
Well, who said anything about sacrifice?
She said that her life was sacrificed because she had never married. And maybe she remained unmarried for...
So I'll show you... Well, what was it that he said? So let's now take a look. See, I know that a lot of you know what the Gemara says and what the Midrashim say. Yeah, take a look at source number 7, and then we'll go backwards a little bit. Gemara in Tanit says, Amar Shmuel bar Nachmani, Amar Yonatan, Shlosha Shalu Shelo Kehogen. There were three people who made a request of God in an improper way. And two of them, even though the request was inappropriate, God responded it in a positive way. And one God responded in a not positive way. What's the case? Eliezer Eved Avraham Dichtiv, Vahayah Nara Asha Amar Eleh Hatina Kadech. When he goes looking for a wife for Yitzchak, he says, and the girl who says, I'm going to give you water to drink, and he writes, Yochel, Afilu, Chigeret, Afilu, Sama. I mean, there could have been, the girl that came out could have had all kinds of problems with her, just because she said, I'm going to give you to drink, who says that would have been a sign? So it says, Yeshiva Kahogim v'nizdamna lo Rivka. That nonetheless, God worked it out for him, and Rivka came out. Sha'ul ben Kish tichtiv, v'ya'ish asher yikanu yashrenu melech, asher gadol, v'et bito yiten lo, David. Shaul makes a promise, whoever is victorious in war against the Philistines, I'll give them wealth, and I'll give them this, I'll give them that, I'll give them my daughter. It could have been anybody. David, and he ended up getting David as a son-in-law. Yiftach said, it could have been all kinds of things. And the Gemara's understanding is that he is saying, I'm going to bring a korban. Hishivu shaloka hogan is damna labito. And God responded in an inappropriate way, meaning in a less than excellent way as far as Yiftach is concerned, and his daughter came out. From this, it doesn't tell us what he does, but it certainly makes it sound that there was something negative here. Until this source, I think you'd be very hard-pressed to find exactly what was the terrible thing that Gilad did, although we certainly have to interpret what is said at the end. Let's go back a little bit now. In the Medrash Tanchuma in source number 6, where the context is ki yafli neder, when a person makes a vow, over here it's talking about the problematic aspect of making vows. Vows are problematic according to Chazal. And then it tells us about what happened. Where it's underlined. Ben Torah. So now it's accusing him of not being a scholar. Ibeid et bito. He lost his daughter. Eimatai, b'shoshan lachem im b'nei Amon, b'nadar ba'oto sha'ah, sh'neem avidor yiftach neder, v'haya yotzei v'gomer, v'haya la'ashem v'alitehu ola. B'oto sha'ah ya alav ka'as min HaKadosh Baruch Hu. God was upset with him. Amar ilu yotzami b'ito kelev, o chazir, o gamal, haya makriv oto. Meaning, how can you make such a vow? Again, this source is understanding the vow is to bring an offering. What if it would have been a pig that came out? You would have brought a pig as an offering. Hayolav ka'as min HaKadosh Baruch Hu, right? L'kach zimein lo bito. That's why his daughter came out. Kol kach lama. Why was God's response so strong? Kidei sheyil midu kol hanodrim hilchot nedarim v'konamot. Shalon en hog ta'ut b'nedarim. That this strong response was to teach us a lesson as far as Nedarim goes. And of course, we have to wonder if the lesson is really God teaching Yiftach, or if the lesson is the Midrash Tanchuma teaching us. V'nei bito yotzeit l'krotov, v'hi k'rotov otov, v'yikrat b'gadav, v'yomaheh, biti, v'anochi patzti, pi el Hashem, v'lo chaloshuv, and I cannot return from my vow. Now that's also something interesting. And if anything, it makes it sound that Yiftach is a positive person. Why? I made a vow, I have to keep my word. And over here, the Midrash brings an attack which was perhaps unanticipated by us. And then it asks, V'lo Pinchas Hayasham? Hu Omer lo uchol shuv, ela Pinchas Amar, ani Kohen Gadol ben Kohen Gadol, ve'eich elech etzel am ha'aretz Yiftach. So what did the Medrash just now do for us? There's a couple of things here. First of all, according to Chazal, even though an extremely long time has transpired since the Pinchas that we know of, nonetheless, Chazal tended to assume this is the same Pinchas. Obviously, it doesn't have to be. It could also be a subsequent Pinchas. Very easy to believe that within the family of the Kohen Gadol, that the same name would have returned a number of times. But this is assuming it's the same Pinchas. Well, correct. Right. So over here, Pinchas is attacked and Yiftach is attacked. It's saying that because of the two of them, and essentially it accuses both of them of being stubborn, it's saying, and being arrogant, it says because of their attitude, that's why this person died. That's why this girl was lost. Which means Yiftach should have gone to Pinchas and said, listen, I made, perhaps a terrible mistake over here, and I said something that I never should have said, and because I did this, I'm stuck now, what should I do? And Pinchas then should have said to him, well, you could be Matur Neder. By the way, how are you Matur Neder? What do you do to be Matur Neder? You find something which is called a Petach. You find an opening. You find an opening to the neder. You say, for example, well, had you known that your daughter would have walked outside, would you have made this neder? And he would have said, well, of course not. It's okay, the neder is, but that's called a petach. So it's very interesting that his name is Yiftach, and they're unable to find the loophole, the petach to get rid of the neder. And on the other hand, Pinchas says, listen, if he wants to come talk to me, he'll come to me. I'm not going to go to him. And he basically stands on the side. As far as the Gemara or the Midrash is concerned, I think it's motion. The air conditioner is motion oriented here. No, just have to move a little bit. I think it comes back on. Okay, anyway, what this midrash is telling us is that what happened never should have happened. An innocent girl is killed. And why is she killed? Because her father is an idiot and because Pinchas is arrogant. Pinchas loses his Ruach HaKodesh. And he ends up, it says that he, terrible things happened to him as well. When it talks about his burial, it says he was buried in, it sounds, in a couple of places. So it sounds that his body wasn't whole and he was buried in a whole bunch of different places. And this midrash is really where we're getting this idea that he did go about and actually go and kill her. Now, the problem, of course, is that did the text actually say it? So let's take a look. If you see the Radak has a wonderful way of explaining this passage. The Radak writes in source number 10, where it's underlined, V'cheinir pasuk ki lo himita, it seems to be from the verse that he never killed her, shamar ve'efke al nafshi la'ot ki lo himita. She said, I'm going to cry for my soul. Seems like a sound that she was never killed, a sign she was never killed. Ach lo yoda ish kamo she'amar v'hi lo yoda ish. Uma shamar gamken v'yas la et nidro. What does it mean v'yas la et nidro? Ashen adar v'lo amar v'yile ola. What should have it said? If it really killed, if he really brought her as an offering, what should have it said? That he brought her as an offering. What does it say? That he fulfilled his vow. So he just doesn't sound at all convinced. Rather, he writes, "Ki prusha haita v'zeu et nedro asher nadar v'haya l'Hashem." That what was the vow? That she should be dedicated to God. What's the vow? The vow is that she will only be for God and nothing else, and therefore the vow was that she would never get married. Which, by the way, let's even say that he's right. And on the one hand, we perhaps like what the Radak says because maybe we're a little bit more comfortable with this than we are than he goes and kills her, because that would really seem to be quite outrageous. I mean, let's think of this for a moment. What are we told? We're told that in the previous chapter, the Jews were worshiping the god or the gods of all of these pagan gods. So what do we know about this? And they forgot God. So what do we know about how they served the pagan gods? One of the things that they did was child sacrifice. So what are we then told about Yiftach? That Yiftach had Ruach Hashem, and Yiftach, you know, has the Torah open in front of him, and Yiftach seems to be totally dedicated towards God. So are you going to say that Yiftach then goes and follows the pagan practice of offering his daughter as a child sacrifice as a thing to thank God? It just seems completely bizarre. But rather, it seems that he's taking the approach that she would be dedicated to God, but no one says that he killed her. Vayala Hashem, kach nira lefi hapshat hapsukim. He goes, this seems to be what the verses say. By the way, what is he referring to when he says this seems to be what the verses say? Which verses? Which evidence is he referring to? So I think it's a couple things. One, it's the whole context. Two, it's she goes off to cry. What does it mean she goes off to cry for her virginity? What exactly does that mean? But afterwards, what does it say? That people came to visit her 4 times a year, right? We had a little difficulty with that. Why do we have difficulty with that? Why do we have difficulty with it? Because if you assume she's dead, so where are they coming to visit her? And that's why you asked where. Right. Read it again. Miyamim yamima telechna benot Yisrael letnot lebat Yiftach hagiladi. I know.
To lament. So if they're lamenting the daughter, they could lament her because she's dead.
They could also lament her because she's alive. Where did Arbat Yamim, right? So it sounds, what does it sound like? It sounds that she lives in seclusion. You put her in a nunnery. She lives in seclusion, and there are 4 times a year that people come to see her. That's I think what the Radak is referring to when he says, look at the pshat of the verses. It doesn't say they go to the grave. It doesn't say anything else. It doesn't say she's dead. It says 4 times a year they go to visit her.
When Hannah gave
Ruel
to God's service, he
Correct. That's the next source, the Rabag, deals with that. But hold on 1 second.
Yeah.
I know.
He sent her away for 2 months.
Yes.
And she came back.
Mm-hmm.
She came back to her father and did with her according
It may be, but it doesn't say. See, that's the problem. The verse doesn't say. It doesn't say. Look at the end of the Radak, at the end of Source 10. What does he write? Kach nireli pshat, pshatei apsukim, v'divrei razal, the rabbis, zechron al-vracha, are different. And what does he say about them? Im kabbalah hi biyadam, aleinu l'kabbalah. If they have a tradition, then we accept it. But what's the Rabbag saying? The Radak saying? The Radak is saying, listen, I am totally unconvinced of this whole theme in the Midrash, and so I'm totally unconvinced of it. He says, if they have a Mesorah, if they have a tradition, then I have no choice but to accept it. But if they're just giving us their interpretation, meaning, if the Midrash Tanchuma, for example, is really just trying to tell us about the severity of making vows, but doesn't have a tradition about what really happened, then what's the Radak saying? That I'm not accepting it. Why? Because I don't think that's what it says. So the Radak over here is telling you, the verses, I believe, mean X. Rabbis say something else. If they have a tradition, then I don't have a choice but to accept it, but he leaves that as an if. He doesn't tell you at the end what he thinks. Or perhaps he does tell you what he thinks. The Ralbag goes in a very similar approach. And the Ralbag says, "V'nei yotzei mil dati beito yeh be'echrach ba'al ha'chayim v'im ha'yam imin ha'adam yeh la'ashem v'im yuchad l'vodat ha'shem yitpurach levad v'im yeh zachor lo yitzterek sh'yeh perush menisha ki kfar yeh miyuchad l'vodat ha'shem yitpurach b'zulat zeh ha'ofan k'mo shemtza b'ko'onim u'leviyim u'matzano gam kin zeh ha'lashon b'shmuel." So he's saying that the verse is saying that the person will be dedicated to God. But and by the way, I do want to point out, there is a very easy solution to the whole thing, to the whole vow over here. The vow could have been, I'm going to dedicate the value. There's a whole thing called erichin, right? There's a mishnah that's based on verses, that a person makes a vow, I'm going to give this person for a korban, it means the value of that person. So you take a person, see how much they'd be worth on the market, whatever it is, and you take that value and you give it. So over here, whatever walks out of my house, that value I'm going to give as a korban. And that could have been a very simple way of solving this whole thing. Again, to use the words of the Radak, if Chazal have a tradition, this is what Yiftach did, it's completely outrageous because it goes against Jewish tradition, it goes completely against halacha. You're talking about murder. You're talking about a korban, which is not acceptable. And it's totally, totally repugnant to Judaism, every single aspect of that. On the other hand, if you want to say that Yiftach is basically a thug, he's a thug who's uneducated, which, by the way, is very hard to be convinced after you read the whole chapter, and especially the one line that keeps coming back, is that the Spirit of God was within him. And the vow that he makes, why does he make the vow? I'm repeating myself, why does he make the vow? Because his whole speech was copying this week's parasha. And in this week's parasha, we find that Am Yisrael make a vow, so he makes a vow. So what should the vow have been? The vow, again, the simplest reading should have been, whatever walks out of his house, the value of that thing he would give as a korban.
Mm-hmm.
Nothing.
You think you can
build your life? Yeah. It's as if I said, I'm going to give this value to Wutzdaka.
Right, but it doesn't have any connection to the object
itself. Right. Right. It's just a question.
It doesn't have to change status.
Correct. It's just a question of value. So I'm saying that's what's really quite surprising over here. But if I want to take this approach, we understand why the Ralbag and the Radak are both taking this approach. It is this whole thing of them crying for her, you know, for her solitude and crying for, you know, so otherwise it really is quite strange. Which means, why in the world? I mean, if she's going to die, is that's the only aspect of her life that she's going to cry about? I mean, it does sound to be somewhat bizarre. The only regret that she had is that she never slept with somebody. Instead, the Ralbag is saying is that no, that she would be dedicated to God, and to be dedicated to God means that's it, you spend all your time with God. But of course, there's a problem then. There are others who are dedicated to God, like Kohanim, and like Leviim, and like Shmuel. So why in those cases is it different? Then he goes on to explain that you may like or not like the rest of what the Rabbah says, but it goes on to explain that a woman who's married would have various responsibilities for her husband, and how could she possibly serve God and her husband as well? If you want to read it. Right, right. That's what the Rabbah claims. But again, what's he working very hard to explain? What's he working so hard to explain? Why this had to be the fulfillment of the vow, and why she therefore has to, you know, just stay and basically the image that you get, I mean, which is probably not fair, is her sitting by herself and reading Tehillim all day and praying and whatever, and maybe even selling red strings, I don't know.
It seems very boyish. It's like you're saying she became a nun. Yeah.
Right.
Not us.
Well, it's not us because it's certainly not normative. But let's be honest, that there are many aspects of Christianity which have its origin in Judaism. Now, the issue sometimes is not, is this a Jewish idea or not a Jewish idea? The question is how you apply it, which means, let's take, if you want to talk about separating from one spouse, Moshe separates from his spouse. Moshe, I mean, that is the case. Moshe separates from his spouse for the majority of the time of his leadership of Am Yisrael. So you're going to tell me, no, Judaism never preaches celibacy. No, but so I'm saying, so you do have one aspect of it. So now the question is therefore every single Kohen or every single rabbi, so what the priesthood did is they may have taken one aspect of Moshe's life, which may have been after he was married and after he had children and so on, and now they're focusing on Moshe up on Har Sinai, which then continues with that status, to be the normative position for the masses. So the question is not that, oh, that's not a Jewish idea. The question is that within the Jewish context, it's applied in very limited places. So over here to say, oh, this is a nun and it's a not Jewish idea, well, maybe the Ralbag and Radak think that it is a Jewish idea, but they think it's a Jewish idea only as a result of a vow and so on and so forth. And by the way, and what do you think is the more reasonable reading of the chapter? Do you think the more reasonable reading is that he took his daughter and he executed her? Or do you think the more reasonable reading is that he told her that her life must now be dedicated to God? And that's all that she can do. Which is correct. Correct. Which absolutely is a sacrifice. Now, what's the irony of this whole thing? And we touched it very, very briefly in the beginning. Okay, that's one of it. That's part of it. Is that his origin is, again, somewhat questionable. What's the other irony? What's the other piece of irony over here? Is that who did Am Yisrael fight? B'nei Ammon. Where does Ammon come from? Right, source 14. Right, the incestuous relationship between Lot and his daughter. V'hatzi'ira, the last verse in 14. V'hatzi'ira gam hi yilda ben v'tikra shemo ben ami hu avi b'nei Ammon ad hayom. So therefore, if he's fighting against b'nei Ammon, and b'nei Ammon comes from this illegitimate relationship between Lot and his daughter, is it possible, therefore, that Yiftach, you know, you correctly pointed out before, that he only has one child. He only has one child. Who does he expect to walk out of the door other than his daughter, so his wife? So does he know exactly what he's saying? So could it therefore be that, again, this son of this prostitute, whatever, has this heightened sensibility? And again, he does seem to have a very good historical understanding. Does he therefore make this vow, which will end up with his daughter remaining a virgin for the rest of her life, as part of this spiritual battle against B'nai Ammon, who are the result of the relationship between Lot and his own daughter? Which means, is this, as I said, this is at least ironic, and maybe actually a bit more than that. And it is interesting in terms of his own speech. What does he bring in the middle of the whole speech? What does he bring in which didn't seem to fit in at all? He starts talking about Balak. You know, Balak and Moab and so, where did that fit in? And the girls that they brought down and so on and so forth. Which means it could be over here that Yiftach has a sensitivity to this. He himself, by the way, is very disturbed when it happens. But despite that concern, is there, as I said, just this is, I'll conclude, I'll say, this is at least ironic and maybe much more than that. Which means that there's at least something interesting in terms of, you know, the quote-unquote poetic justice over here. But it may be a bit more than that. It may be that he knows exactly what he's saying, and this is a conscious thing that he's doing. Let's just try to conclude. Should we be taking the approach that he actually took his daughter and executed her? So you heard what the Radak said. Radak said, Chazal say this. If Chazal have a tradition about this, then we don't have a choice and we have to accept it. If they don't specifically have a tradition and this is what happened, and rather they're reading into it because of all types of agendas and so on, they want to teach ideas about, to be concerned about making vows and so on, he says if they don't have tradition, then it's not the pshat of the verses. He doesn't say. He doesn't seem to know. And he leaves it open. And I think that the words of the Radak really resonate with us. Because on the one hand, he's right. It doesn't fit in, not just to the, it doesn't fit into the whole context. Yiftach does not seem to be this terrible, weak person. By the way, the other thing which is fascinating is what in the world did Pinchas do to get attacked over here? I mean, what was Pinchas' role in all this? Why is Pinchas being attacked? And say, listen, Pinchas should have done this and so on, and therefore he loses Ruach HaKodesh. What did Pinchas... Correct. So that becomes the question, like, why to bring Pinchas back into this, especially if it's the same Pinchas that rose to his glory because of his attacking Cosby and attacking the outrage that took place over there. And if that's the case, then you have, you know, both Yiftach and Pinchas acting in a similar way. But as I said, the attack against Pinchas seems completely gratuitous. I mean, there seems to be no reason for this whatsoever. The Kabbalistic sources go further, and Pinchas is Eliyahu, and Eliyahu loses his Ruach HaKodesh based on this. And the Zohar, and the Sefer Gilgulim, has all kinds of interesting things to say about this. But when it comes down to the core, as I said, I just think that this connection between Bnei Amon, between Amon himself, and between Yiftach becomes, I think, the interesting question, which means if this is who he's fighting, does he see that as the core of their tuma, the core of their impurity, and therefore he wants to create excessive purity as the response to impurity, because that's the way to be victorious. And once he's victorious, so then, you know, once you win, so then you don't want to necessarily keep the vow that you made, right? But perhaps he understands...
You're saying that he understood that his daughter would be the one to come in.
I didn't say it. Right? Because if that's his only child. So
if it was his wife, the same thing.
Right, right. But if it's his only child, and again, there are limited possibilities over here, but then the ramifications over here is that the line gets cut off. That's really what we're told. Is that the line of Yiftach gets cut off, and I think that's ultimately what really bothers him. But does this become a reasonable, you know, again, in a certain perspective, does it become a reasonable vow to make once you take into consideration who this particular enemy is? So as I said, that's the thought or the suggestion. Shabbat Shalom.